Welcome to the Digital Agency Pros Podcast with Andrew McBurney, your host of Digital Agency Pros. In this podcast, we sit down and talk to CEOs, founders, and professionals in the marketing world and talk shop all things related to building an agency and marketing. All right, let's get into it.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode. And today we have Lee Goff. And Lee started his agency in 2003 called Get You Wired from his bedroom. After growing it into a multi-million dollar agency and winning multiple awards, Lee decided to retire in 2014 and handed off his responsibility to other people, ultimately leading to his full exit from the company in 2016 by selling his remaining shares in the company. Now Lee focuses on helping agencies owners to start, scale, and run and potentially sell their agency easier and faster while still being profitable. Welcome to the show, Lee.
Thank you for having me, Andrew. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. So I love how you, you're in the trenches, you figured out how that worked, and then now you're helping other people. So before we get into how you're helping other agency owners, why don't we talk a bit about where you came from? What's your origin story? How did you get started and kind of what that looked like when you were back in the trenches building up your own agency?
Well, you know, I was raised in South Mississippi, and there weren't a lot of opportunities down where I was at when I was growing up. And so I decided to transition to Atlanta in the year 2000. And I started working for a Fortune 100 IT company called Radiant Systems. You probably heard of like Micros and or the point of sales for a restaurant, right? Micros and Squirrel and all that stuff. So that's kind of where I learned about, everything digital, basically. It just kind of, you know, this is in 2000, so it was still kind of, everything was kind of new at that time. From there, I figured out that I'm not a programmer. I'm not an engineer at all. I to this day cannot write one line of code. I took a leadership position at another company in Oklahoma City. And eventually from there, the company I was working with was a family owned company, and they were being extorted by a web programmer that had written some code. And our clients were like Boeing, you know, multi-international, just huge companies. And they'd go log into this portal and had this big yellow box with a big red number at 25. They'd log in and goes 24, 23, 22. And if it got to zero, the whole system shut down unless they were trying to get more money out of it. Right? And so I saw firsthand how there was a level of ethics and integrity and communication that at that time was starving in the industry. So that's pretty much was my cornerstone of the business. And so I took over that project, and that was our very first project. And the way I communicate about business resonated with other small business owners, and meaning I didn't speak geek speak. I speak business and can translate it into geek speak, right? And it just took off from there. Jump ahead 5 years. I started to get you wired in 2003. Jump ahead 5 years, you know, we're a little shy of about a half a million, probably 8 employees. And then that's in 2008, the bottom drops out. You know, all the financial, everything. Everything just drops out of the bottom of it. And so I'm stuck in a really weird spot. I didn't have any leads coming in. Nobody had any money. And so I had to diversify, and I became strategic partners with Guerrilla Marketing International and at the time Infusionsoft, which is now Keep. And those two relationships changed my life, right? And so I had the opportunity to be mentored by J. Conrad Levinson. In my opinion, one of, if not the most influential marketing and advertising minds of our generation, possibly a couple generations. He's the guy behind, you know, Marlboro Man, Jolly Green Giant, Starfish Tuna, Morris the Cat, you know, you name it. It goes on and on and on. And so I was lucky enough to be mentored by him, and then had a strong relationship with Infusionsoft, and that just blossomed, you know, jump ahead another 7 or 8 years, and would have shattered the seven-figure mark a couple of different times, you know, I mean, meaning one, two, you know, we kept going up and up, and we wound up becoming the world's largest Infusionsoft certified partner. Now, again, he's called Keep certified partner, and very proud of that. We sold hundreds of apps every year and serviced over 3,000 businesses globally, 43 states, 17 countries when I sold it is what was our out, you know, our outreach or our reach kind of on our client base. I absolutely loved every minute of it. And I evolved into being a CEO, which is a very tough transition, by the way. It's where a lot of agency owners have a hard time pulling themselves out of that entrepreneur into an CEO position. But what I realized when I got to that CEO position is that I missed being in the trenches. To other entrepreneurs, I mean, I am an entrepreneur at heart, right? I mean, I became a CEO, got the t-shirt, did it successfully, KPIs, running it by the numbers, systems, processes, leadership, the whole thing, and did it, you know. But I really found that I just love being in the trenches and helping other small business owners, and specifically helping other agency owners. And so that's what I did after I exited my agency, is I dove headfirst into creating the world's most comprehensive business-minded and tools-minded, not tactical, which is a big difference. I don't teach you how to do Facebook or how to do Google or how to write copy. I teach you how to put the systems in place so you don't have to constantly do that, right? So it's just it's more of a mindset shift than anything else. And that's what I've been doing ever since. So I launched that company at the beginning of, I started developing the content in 2017, launched the actual company in 2018. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it for about 3.5 years ever since. So.
That's awesome. So going back a bit to kind of the earlier days for you, it sounds like that strategic partnership and ultimately it sounds like some mentorship was a big pivotal moment for you. Is mentorship something, maybe you teach people about it nowadays, it sounds like you're a mentor to many agency owners today, but as you were coming up, is that something you actively looked for and kind of would find that next person who kind of had walked the path? Or was it, did you just find like one mentor early on or earlier on and kind of go from there?
Well, you know, I think I made so many what I would call rookie mistakes. It was absolutely insane. I genuinely learned by screwing it up more than I did getting it right, you know. And so I think I also, unlike a lot of other entrepreneurs out there, they, you know, us entrepreneurs are very driven, very smart, very talented people. So we have a tendency to think that we can figure it out on our own. Or if anything, just go piecemeal it, right? So I'll go to this Facebook group, I'll go to that blog, or I'll go over here and I'll pull this from over here and I'll pull this from over here. And I did that and it worked okay, you know. But the problem with that is one, you're not as smart as you think you are, if you're anything like me, that is, okay? God has a way of humbling you over time. If he hasn't gotten there yet, I promise you he will, okay? And then two, when you're pulling things piecemeal from other, you know, other areas, well, none of them were actually designed and engineered to work as a comprehensive system. Therefore, by definition, when you pull it from here and you pull it from here and you pull it from here, there's going to be breakpoints, the weakest link in the chain, for lack of a better term, right? And has a tendency to not be as effective. And the reason I say that is because when I did finally actually figure out that I needed help and I needed, you know, I needed to find someone that I respected and trusted and had some of the tools and dedicated myself to listening to that one mentor, It changed my life, you know. So I focused on listening to J. Conrad Levinson when it came to the marketing and the advertising. So how to get in people's heads and how to get them to take action and how to get them to move kind of things. And then I focused on, there were two mentors, one called Simon Sinek. I never actually personally met him, but I absolutely love his what's called group leadership type style. It's not the old school ivory tower. It's more like everybody has a say and everybody can have an input on how this company and our lives are going to move forward. Love him. He was a smaller part of the mentorship. The primary mentor program that I got into was Elite Forum, where I'm in Infusionsoft. And they would take the top like 1% of everybody who used Infusionsoft at that time. I think they opened it up now. But at that time, you had to be in the top 1% plus seven figures plus to be even invited into the program. So I got into that program, me and my, at the time, vice president of operations, and really took to heart all of the stuff that they started, you know, coaching and preaching on. And whenever I got those comprehensive systems, I still to this day have that 3-ring binder. It's about this thick, you know, just different tools, tactics, org charts, leadership, communication styles, accountability rhythms, KPIs, all that stuff. And whenever I got that comprehensive system, that really made all the difference in the world because, you know, this piece links to that piece and it makes sense when it happens. And then this one goes to that one. And then that, so it just kind of, it's a process. It's a system. Right. And it made all the difference in the world. So I guess to make a long story short here is, you can figure out a lot of things on your own. You're super smart out there. Nobody's arguing that. And you can piecemeal it to up to a certain point. But you will need to find a mentor that you can trust and that has the right systems in place for you and follow that individual. It might be one or two, meaning if I have an agency sales system, that's awesome. Hire me to do that. If somebody else has something that's, you know, another system, but just make sure you get the whole system from one coach or one mentor and dive headfirst into it and build that out for your agency, because that's how you start to remove yourself. That's how you get that quality of life. That's how you scale. Is finding that mentor and finding that person that you can trust and taking those entire systems and bringing them out into your agency. So piecemealing it at first was good, but once you get a dedicated coach and a dedicated mentor with proven systems, it is a life-changing, absolute life-changing moment in your world, and you'll look back on it like that 10 years down the road, so in most cases.
Yeah, I can't agree more. Even like when I look back at my own personal experience, about probably 6 months into running my marketing company, I sat down and basically figured out, I was like, okay, this guy over here, he's done, like he's well beyond, like probably like 5 or 6 years into his agency at the time. So I just cornered him. I was like, hey, like what's it going to take for me, for you to mentor me? Right. Yeah. And I ended up working
exactly.
him.
Exactly.
Yeah. I ended up, I think it was 10 hours a week I would give him. And then he would sit down and look at my stuff and give me advice once every 2 weeks or something. Like it was just the thing I offered him. And the insights that I got from him in terms of like leadership, managing a team, managing clients, like all these things, I didn't know any of them. Right. And they were all things that applied right then and there and already and for the past 6 months. So it's like I can't stress the importance of finding that person, whether it's like an organic relationship or like a paid situation or whatever. But in my experience, every single time I've hired a coach, every single time I've found a mentor in a certain area, it's always brought those results to the next level.
I agree. I've never, ever, ever paid a coach. Now, sometimes you'll pay a coach and you'll only get a couple of nuggets out of it, and sometimes you might not feel like you got the money out of it or whatever. I have had some coaches I'm like, I didn't get quite the experience I was looking for there. But looking back on it, all of a sudden that's that one little thing that they gave you that saved me $25,000 a year or made me $100,000 a year. And you know, those are the kind of nuggets that a coach brings to the table. It's the little things that you're doing wrong that we see because of experience, and say, hey, stop doing that. Do it like this. And you'll see over time that'll aggregate into another $250,000 a year in revenue. Right. Mm-hmm. So it might not have that big splash moment right then, but it's the kind of things that have longevity in most cases. If you get a good coach, it's the kind that's going to make profit or make your life better over time, like over the next 10 years. Right. So.
Yeah. Awesome. I love that. Now when you're out selling Infusionsoft setups and integrations and probably upkeep and that sort of thing, or I suppose keep is what they go by now. Did you sell productized services? Was it complete custom plans? Like, what did that look like back in the day for you?
Well, as with everybody, it was pretty much custom at first, right? And then all of a sudden we won some pretty big awards in the Infusionsoft keep community, and it put us on the radar to where we had a lot of people coming at us. And so we had to figure out, me and my at the time, sales manager, we were spending 20, 30 hours a week doing proposals. And we were like, this is ridiculous. This has got to stop. Okay. And so it all started with just figuring out how to streamline the proposal process. And I think we probably did it the way a lot of people do it, is we did the block of hours to get started. Okay, you know, we'll sell 10, 20, 40, 100, 200 kind of block of hours. That helped a lot. And so my very first kind of experiment into productizing was kind of a block of hours, but by definition, that is not a product. That's just a block of hours, right? But eventually it led into where we had industry specific automation products. And so one of them was in real estate, and it came with 9 campaigns, adopt a buyer, different types of campaigns. And we would sell those to the tune of 200 or 300 apps a year. We had one for CrossFit, we had different verticals. And so the very first true product line that I had was selling out of the box, done for you, kind of pre-canned automation campaigns that were industry specifics. And it was fantastic. Mine were just, the light bulb ding went off, right? It was like, holy crap. I mean, these people love this thing, and it's delivering so much more value than even the custom work in most cases, because every time you deliver it, you can make it a little better. Oh, you know what? They didn't like that. Change that. And so the next time it goes out, it's a little better. And so after you've delivered it 10 times, this thing is beast mode, man. It's like it's beast mode. And you can click a button and install all 9 of them, have your staff spend 10 hours customizing it. You charge $2,500. Do the math on that. You just made $250 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. So it's how you go about putting this stuff together. The old saying, begin with the end in mind, that kind of is at the core of what a product line is. Build it once, sell it 1,000 times. There's a bunch of cliches that kind of, you know, that come along with it. But whenever you focus your efforts in a specific target audience, like underwater basket weaving, or I don't care what it is, you know, CPAs or whatever it is, and you establish a product line, you get to do what's called product optimization. Therefore, you're making that product better every single time. You're going to deliver overwhelming value every single time, unless it's just like a total Karen of a client kind of situation, right? So which none of us really ever want that. But the reality is that a lot of people have a misconception around product lines as if it's going to be so cookie cutter and, you know, they're not going to like it. That's not true. That's not true. And I think the best example I can give you is if you ever bought a new car, you go, or even if you dreamed of buying your brand new Tesla or whatever it might be, you know, you go out there and you go to Tesla.com and you configure your Tesla. When you get that Tesla, let's say you buy it and you get it and you configured it, you pick the color, the tires, the stereo system, everything, nav, computer, everything in that Tesla, you genuinely feel like that's my Tesla. It's so unique and custom to me. No one else has one like it. Now, the reality is there's probably another 500 of them on the road, probably, right? But that doesn't matter. But it's because how you feel about that product. And so if you've ever had that experience where you can kind of go in there and customize your own product, Henry Ford, you know, nailed it, you know, and on being able to kind of standardize the assembly line. When I say they nailed it, I mean the assembly line, allowing people to kind of go through and pick the pieces that they want and have it all mass produced and all begin with the end in mind kind of scenario. So now you can go out, you know, jump ahead from where Henry Ford was. I mean, at the time, all you get was black because they were just figuring out the whole damn assembly line. Now you can get anything, four-wheel drive, motor, it doesn't matter, convertibles. You can get any kind of car you want, but it's still a checkbox on an order form, right? They're not going to go custom build the damn engine for you. I promise you they're not. I mean, you might hope they do, but they're not. Okay, it's a damn manufacturing assembly line that's going to click, 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 boom, boom, thanks. But when you get that car, you feel like Superman or Superwoman. You genuinely do. If you ever bought a new car, you know what I'm talking about. And you're like, oh my God, you're like, oh, you know, you're feeling like, you know, He-Man over there. Right. And so the exact same thing holds true in your digital product line. Okay. And so, you want a website? Great. You want that to be custom or templated? Do you want 5 pages? You know? And so everything's in a checkbox, a line item. By the time they're done, their budget has been disclosed because they're picking the line items off of the menu when they see the price, just like you did in a car. So you don't have to discuss budget at all under a productized model. Your value is always through the roof. So you now have what's called a value-based pricing model, meaning that the people pay for the value that they get out of the product, not the amount of time you spend delivering the product. Fundamental shift there is huge. Fundamental shift there. They don't. People do not care if you spend 100 hours doing something. They genuinely don't care. They want the result. They want 5 leads. If it takes you 5,000 hours or it takes you 5 minutes, they don't care.
Yeah, they're after that result, right?
All they want are the 5 leads. All they want are the whatever it might be. So if you can standardize your offering into kind of a, for lack of a better term, like a checkbox ordering type scenario, what happens is this: your proposal time goes to like 15 minutes instead of me and my guy doing 20 to 30 hours a week. We would spend 1 hour with all prospects, and at the end of that one, we got 1 hour for free. After that, you bought a block of time.
I love that. Yeah, and that's something I went through as well, where it was originally just those custom SEO campaigns, right? And it's like, we'll just do whatever you want, right? And just give us the money. We're hurting over here, right? And
begging for dollars. Yep.
As we grew, it's like, okay, we don't need to just work with anybody out right now. So it's like, or anymore. So it's like we set up that criteria first to kind of get rid of some of the people who are like never going to turn into good clients. But then also it's like, well, here are our packages. Which one do you want to start with? Right?
No doubt.
Now, one thing, and this is actually something that we're looking at in Review Robin, the software company that I'm focused on right now, where how much is too much control, right? Because like if we in a, and this is relevant in like any industry, I think, but so let's take web design, for example, like how much control do you want to give them versus how much do you want to say, trust us, we're the experts in terms of deciding what they truly need?
Well, see, you hit the nail on the head right there. The trust us, we know what you need scenario. Because see, the reality is a lot of times you don't know what they need. You might think you do because you think you know a lot about marketing. What you don't know is what's going on in their head and in their wallet and in their business and their life. So yes, you are the marketing expert. Nobody's arguing that. You are the creative genius. No one is arguing that. But what you don't know is what's happening in their world. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let me explain what I mean by that. Definitely can go way too far with the control. Okay. So the way you set up your product line is critical because a product line is not intended to get rid of all the custom work. As a matter of fact, it's intended to help you establish a value-based pricing model. So that way, when you do the custom work, you're getting paid what you're worth. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they come in, they want to get a 10-page website, hypothetical. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you have one off the shelf here that's a templated 10-page website that's $5,000. Okay. Well, they don't want the templated website. They are unique. They are special. They want it custom. Do you think they're expecting to pay more than $5,000 for a custom website whenever they know the templated is $5,000? So if you pay for something custom, it's always more expensive, right? Mm. Right? So mm-hmm. now when you do the custom website, you can get better charge $10,000. So if you don't have that product line that establishes like that value-based baseline, then you can never charge super premium for custom work. You're never going to get rid of the custom work. And mm-hmm. you're not going to tell the clients that they have to do a product line. Under no circumstances would you do that. Mm-hmm. Okay, what you do is you give them the option to pick from a product line. You're mm-hmm. going to find out that a big chunk of them will just go with the product line.
Gotcha. And okay, interesting.
The more mature your product line is, the more people are going to want it because that means you've dialed it in. You've figured out what their pain points are and you are now solving them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But there's always going to be those people who want freedom mm-hmm. and that's perfectly fine. You can have custom freedom all day long, but you're going to pay for it. You're not going to pay $100 an hour for it. You're going to pay $225 an hour for it because you're going to consume all the thought leaders. Mm-hmm. When you're doing custom work, it's you, it's the thought leaders most of the time, the higher tier individuals that have to be on that project. And so when you're pulling those higher tier individuals off of this production work, I'm sorry. And when you're pulling them out of overseeing production work, it slows everything down.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're going to find out is having a product line will allow you to cookie cutter the ones who just want to come in and get a turn and burn website or even a, and when I say turn and burn is not the right word because they're still pretty custom. Even these templated now with all the style sheets, you can, by the time you're done with it, it looks pretty damn custom. But if they want to step up and do the real cut, like everything from scratch custom, then they need to understand that it's going to be very expensive. Just go with the product line. You'll be happy with the product line. It's going to deliver exactly what you want. Mm-hmm. But if you don't want to go with a product line, by all means, step up to the custom and we'll charge you accordingly. So you're never backing anyone to a corner where you have to do this. You know, you're not going to, and this is not a dictator type scenario. You're always going to give them the option to go up in the food chain in higher level custom stuff, but you have to establish a product line baseline. Therefore, when they say no to that product, they are saying, I'm willing to spend more money to get higher quality to work.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah.
That's the key. Yep. So yeah. That's the key. That's where a lot of people go wrong is they think, oh, I'm just going to do custom. They'll love me for my custom. And they will. They won't respect you for it, but they'll love you for it. They won't pay you for it, but they will definitely love you for it. That's for sure. Mm. So ask yourself a question. Do you want to be loved more or do you want to be respected, paid, and loved more?
Yeah. And I love that because you're setting the kind of the floor of the ceiling, right? And you're like, here's where we start. Mm-hmm. If you want to go further, we can absolutely do that. Right. And because that is definitely a problem, like a challenge that agencies face or freelancers face, anybody doing any sort of anything that kind of touches anything creative, right? It even happens in SEO because we have to make modifications to the website, for example, right? Mm-hmm. And there is typically that, in my experience with all the agency owners that I know, that clash of ego, right? Where the SEO professional is saying, hey, I know best, this is going to get you the results. And they're looking at it from the SEO lens saying, and kind of thinking, this is all that matters. We're focused on number one rankings, not really taking in the fact that, oh, hey, this is these entrepreneurs like life's work. It's attached to their name. They want to be proud of it. They want to have a say. They want to have that contribution to it. They don't want to have something on the homepage that they don't love, right?
Right, exactly. Or they'll repeat the keywords 5,000 times where it ranks number one. When somebody gets there, it sounds like a 3-year-old wrote the damn thing and it never converted. You know what I'm talking about? So
yeah, right.
It's always a balance, right? In moderation. I have a 12-year-old daughter, and when you have kids, you'll understand everything in life. See, baby, you can do just about anything you want. You just got to learn to do it in moderation, okay? If you want to go have a beer, go have a beer, but don't drink 18 of them. Have one and dinner and go home, right? You know, it's everything in moderation, you know? So it's a balance. It's a life is very much a balancing act, you know? And so the more you understand that about your target audience, the better.
For sure. I love that. Well, this actually answered a lot of questions I've been working on. Like, we're right now rewriting the copy for our software as a service website. So not agency, but there's a challenge that I faced when I was out in the field where it's like you buy software. And if you're a small player, like maybe you only have like 20 clients or something, you don't really have any flexibility in terms of dictating your plan. They usually have three options. You choose one of the three. Or they have the fourth plan, which is called enterprise, which is like way too intimidating to ever click, right?
Well, that's the exact same thing I was talking about. You got the three off the shelf, and if you want to do enterprise, that's fine. But make no mistake about it, you're going to be paying through the nose for that enterprise.
So. Yeah, and so what we've been thinking about is even with these smaller agencies, we're wondering, is there the potential to offer that custom kind of menu, right? Because like when you're buying a software, for example, like you need to take into account how many client locations do you need, how many like the different number of emails that you need to send out or text messages or whatever, right? And it's like whenever we would buy something, and it's like, so maybe it had like email and text included, but we only needed email, right? Well, can we make a custom where we get more email and no text messages, right? We're kind of looking at that right now. So it's interesting hearing somebody who's gone so far down this rabbit hole perspective from an agency point of view. And I think there are going to be a lot of carryovers in other industries as well, which is really, really interesting.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but the funniest part about one of the things about our industry that is absolutely cracks me up is, one, we think we're brilliant, okay, because it's all digital and we think that we're the first ones to ever do this stuff. The reality is all of this productization stuff has been around in all other industries for thousands of years. Demo head cold, I was telling you before, but we're just now adopting it because, you know, we think we're so damn smart we have to reinvent everything, which is why we always rename all the cool little terms, you know, like total customer lifecycle journey, client path, total, you know, all these, we have different avatars. All this really is what the hell does your clients want and who the hell are your clients, basically target audience and what do they want and how much cost to get them. Like, I mean, and it's been the same damn thing for thousands of years. We just give it cute little different names. But the reality is productization is the pervasive pricing model in just about all other industries. You can't think of one. I mean, you know, very seldom. Hell, even attorneys nowadays have it where it's productized. Will and testimony, everything. You know, your divorce decree, whatever the hell you're doing, it's a templated form letter deal. They put a junior attorney on it to fill in the gaps, and they'll come in, read the document, wow you for 30 minutes, but they charge you $5,000, cost them 30 minutes for $5,000. So that if you don't know that's what they're doing, let me just enlighten you. That's what they're doing. Okay. And same thing on CPA, same thing on manufacturing, same thing in retail, same thing at Walmart, same thing cars. I don't give a damn what it is. They are all productized. We are behind the eight ball in this.
I love that. It's interesting. That's definitely a trend that I've noticed where it's like a marketer, a creative marketer will read a book and be like, oh, I'm just going to make this slight tweak to this method and rename it. Now I have my own company branded term. That's going to be, it's so brilliant. Funny.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm going to change the world. You know what I mean? All the time. And the reality is the dumber you can get in your communications, the more people are going to understand what you're talking about. The more people understand what you're talking about, the more they're going to trust you. The more they trust you, the more money they're going to give you.
Well, that's definitely something I learned in a first handful of digital products that we launched years ago after hiring our first legit sales copywriter. It's like, they're not using any of the technical terms that we're using. They're not using any of these big smart words. It's just like straightforward. And then we look at the numbers, they're like, this just crushed anything we've ever done before. And
here's the fundamental rule. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't interrupt. What were you saying?
No, go ahead, please.
Best piece of copywriting advice I ever got was from a guy named Emerson Brantley. Okay, one, I guess it's a two-part piece of advice, but one, if you're writing it for anything higher than the fourth grade education, then you fail. Immediately fail, okay? And then two, when you're writing this sentence, what are you writing that sentence for? Most people are like, oh, to get a point across or to do this like that. No, you're writing that sentence to get them to read the next sentence.
Mm. Yeah, I love that.
And then you write that sentence to get them to read the next sentence. Mm. And then you write that sentence to get them to read the next sentence. And you do it at a fourth grade reading level with high emotion buzzwords. Yeah. None of that's technical. None of that's geeky. None of that's TCPIP, keyword densities. None of that. Nobody gives a damn about any of that. No, except for us, you know, except for the agency owners, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. One thing I found interesting, for about 2-3 years or so, I niched into the dental industry, and they had an interesting grasp on SEO specifically, where they would actually learn a lot of the baseline things just to kind of feel like they knew what they were talking about in the meetings, right? Mm-hmm. And but when you were delivering the results, you still weren't talking that stuff, right? Like, sure, you were like making it relatable so they knew what you're talking about and what they're benefiting from, but you're not going down that rabbit hole of like, oh, here's all the things we did, right?
They don't care about domain name authority. They care if they're ranking. They don't care. You know what I'm about? They don't care about any of that. So
for sure. Yeah. Now, in terms of the agency setting, there, like, agencies come in many, many different shapes and sizes, right? There are result-based agencies, there are more creative agencies, right? And most agencies land somewhere in the middle, right? Where, maybe they're selling like maybe pay-per-click advertising or SEO, but they're also doing web design and branding or market, like a design, whatever, right? Now, with your current company, so you're essentially a consultant, you help, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you help agency owners implement these sorts of strategies that you're talking about so that they can ultimately grow quicker, easier, less stress, more profit, right?
I'd add to that, there are actually two aspects. I do one-on-one coaching, and that's going to be teach a man or woman to fish. Mm-hmm. And so it'll take 2 or 3 months until I see the light bulb go off in your head. And I realize, okay, you got it. Now I'll give you the fish. Now in consulting, I'm like, okay, here's the fish. You know what I'm talking about? But coaching is you'll pay $1,500 a month. It'll take you 3 months to figure it out. You'll end up paying about $4,500. Consulting, it'll be done in 30 days. It'll cost you 10 grand, but it's going to be done in 30 days. So
gotcha.
Consulting is more like where I come in and kind of just help. I'm rolling up my sleeves. I'm actually physically in the trenches helping you, leading your team, doing what has to get done. Mm-hmm. That's to give the woman or give the entrepreneur a fish scenario. Mm-hmm. Coaching is where, okay, I'm teaching you how to go about what kind of bait, you know, how to go about fishing, right? And so that's two completely different things. And I do both. I do coaching, but we do have some off-the-shelf products. One of them is called the Agency Sales System. I am more proud of this product than I am of any other product I've ever built in my entire career. Mm-hmm. Absolute game changer. It's phenomenal. So we come in and do your lead magnets and your call to action management system and your follow-up systems and your emails and everything. It's off the shelf. It's bam, in about 30 days, magic happens, right? And love that. And so we do have some consulting products that we're rolling out. We have one out now. We're actually going to be rolling out more over the next few years. But so I do both coaching and consulting. So like I said, teach an entrepreneur pitch or give an entrepreneur pitch kind of scenario. So.
Gotcha. I love that. Now, in terms of the types of changes or tweaks or additions or maybe subtractions that you see in an agency, a typical client, what kinds of things are leading to the growth specifically, right? Like, are you finding people need to add more services? Is it really all about being like, no, we just need to define what we're offering and scale back the amount of hours we're putting into it? What would that look like?
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought this topic up, because one of the terms that my marketing mentor taught me was called client path. And this is the prereq to total customer lifecycle journey, to all the stuff you've heard. Basically, at the end of the day, you need to think through the beginning to the end, what all they're going to need. So let's roll. I'm going to role play real quick. And let's just use a pediatrician or just any kind of niche. Pick an industry, pick a niche. Okay. Well, those pediatricians have specific needs. Okay. Mm. And they're going to have those needs whether you want to deliver them or not. So let me give you a scenario. Let's say you're a copywriter and you don't do any design, you don't do any technical, all you do is copywriting. Okay. That's great. And you can definitely niche out of that. And all you do is copywriting for pediatricians, and you can niche out in that and you can rock it out. Now, if you do not have your client path defined, then they're going to, your client will have to go out and hire someone to do the design and implementation of the website around the copy of which you wrote. And I would say to you, I hope they love you a lot, because obviously the company doing the design and the web, the design and programming, are going to try to steal your, that business. We have a copywriter, half the cost, does great. We serve pediatricians as well. We got boilerplate copy. It's been proven. It's been implemented on 100 sites. Yeah, but I love my creative copy. Well, the client doesn't care. Hate to break it to you. In most cases, the client doesn't care. And then in some cases, they do. Some cases, they do. So your client path is basically you beginning with your what's called foot in the door strategy. So do they have a plan or not? Yes or no. If they do, then great. A plan is a plan that's documented, not something you're going to brain fart out at me. Okay, you have to actually have it written down somewhere. If they don't have a plan, then sell them the plan. $2,000 to do your plan, or $500 to do your plan, or whatever that looks like. Okay. From there, you have to have the digital assets. Okay. We can't drive traffic to something that doesn't exist. You have a website? No. Well, we need to get you a website. You have a Facebook page? No. Well, we need to set up a Facebook page. Do you want to run Google Ads? Great. Do you have any of the ad copy written or the creative? No. Well, we have to do the creative and write the ads before we can go set it up in the damn platform. Right. So you have what's called digital assets. You have to create the assets to either drive traffic to, or to have to use in the next phase, of which is the media buying, the traffic generation. Right? Makes sense if you think about it, right? You're not going to go pay for traffic to go to something that doesn't exist, all right? And so got to have your website or your landing page or your assets or whatever that looks like. VSL, squeeze page, long form, whatever it looks like. Got to have that. Then you go out to Google, Facebook, billboards, whatever the hell it is to drive traffic. Now, after that, you get into what's called conversion and follow-up. Right. So you got to have, be able to, you got to opt in. When that opt ins, what happens? Where do they go? Is there an email that gets sent? Are there follow up emails that get sent? Does it go into a pipeline to be managed? Does it have lead source tracking? So you have your CRM follow up phase. From there, you get into what's called your we call it KPI metrics reporting. So in other words, they built the website, they're driving traffic to it, they're getting leads in their CRM. Now I want to know if this stuff's working or not. You know, are these leads converting to dollar bills? What are my KPIs? Are we running any split test? Metrics, KPIs, all that fun stuff. And the last phase is going to be your hosting, maintenance, and care plans. Okay, and look, they're going to get this stuff done somewhere. Whether you have a client path that satisfies them or not is a moot point. And you can totally focus on one of those six steps by all day. No doubt about it. And rock it out and make a hell of a good living there. I promise you, you totally can. But your clients will find someone who will go out and do the design, do the programming, and do the traffic if you don't do them. So I suggest to you, when you're scaling your agency, get out of your own way. If you love doing copywriting, that's fine. Don't not do the other stuff because you love copywriting so much, though.
Yeah.
So find someone who complements what you do and bring them in. And so now you can offer a legitimate product for each phase of the client path. Do you have a plan? No. Great. Here's an off-the-shelf one for $500, or is a custom plan for $2,000. Which one would you like to do? I don't need a plan. Just tell me what products I need. You're the expert. You're supposed to know what to tell. Okay, great. I'll tell you what. Let's go through the client path. I have a product for every phase of the client path. The first one is like, let's find out what assets do you need? What are you trying to do today? Well, I just need a damn website. Okay, great, man. I got a templated version and I got a custom version. The template version is $3,000. The custom version is $5,000. Which one do you want to work? I don't care about all custom, dude. Just give me the template. Okay, cool. That'll work. Great. That comes with these 7 pages. Boom. Oh, that's all I need, man. Because remember, if you're serving pediatricians, you know the 7 pages they need. Right? Locations, doctors, staff, forms, HIPAA forms, you know, you're going to know those 7 pages, right? So, okay, great. Now we got a templated website. Wonderful. Do you have any lead magnets to go on that website? So when we go to drive traffic, do you have anything to entice them, to hook them? Nope. What's a lead magnet? Well, I'll tell you what, I'm not going to bore you with it. Just understand, you got to have something to entice them. We have the templated lead magnets. I can get you 3 of them for $200. We literally plop your logo in there and it's done. And then we got the custom version of lead magnets where we custom design it, write all the copy for you. It's $1,000. Which one do you want? Template is good. Cool. That'll work. Dude, we're up to about $3,200 right now. Where do you want to go get your traffic from? I don't know. You're the expert. You tell me. Okay. Here's what's working so far right now. We got this Google little thing, Google remarketing, Facebook through play. You know, you go through the product lines that best serve them, right? And each industry is a little bit specific, a little bit different. So home services, you better understand house and you better understand home advisor, or you ain't going to be getting a whole lot of leads in that space. I just let that know. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go out and compete in Facebook and Google on that, you can do it. It's going to cost you a bloody fortune though. Mm-hmm. Okay. So every industry has its own little unique things. 90% of all digital marketing is identical, but it's that other 10% that allows you to charge super premium prices.
Mm. Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, the details. And so you just walk them through your client path and let them pick the products that they want. And by the time they're done, when you thought you were going to sell them a $3,000 website, what you actually ended up selling them was a $10,000 marketing package that included a website, traffic generation, and a care plan at the end of it.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And at the end of the day, it's like if we're selling things to clients that are generating more problems in their business and they have to put more time into just figuring out how to make it work, ultimately, not only are, like you say, you're leaving money on the table, you're causing problems for the person that's hired you to help them.
I promise you, the last thing they're hiring you to do is cause another problem in their world, okay? They don't want to know about this. And most of you do get those early adopters, the techno guys that want to come in and learn all that stuff. And I would advise you to run. When you get that client coming the door, haul ass. Go get somebody who just wants to pay you to do it. Mm. Because they're going to be all up in your stuff. They're going to be messing with it. Going to change one line of code. It's going to break. They're going to blame you. And here we go. You know, here we go. Right. Just find the right, you know, type tier clients and get them to just pay, get them to pay you to do it, basically, you know, right route to take there. So.
Yeah. Absolutely love that. And honestly, that's exactly what I went through in my experience too, where it's like, we would do the SEO and we would implement it on the website, but then it's like, we wouldn't be monitoring like the conversion optimization. We wouldn't be monitoring the remarketing or setting it up. Like there's all this stuff and email lists, all that stuff that they needed. And as they built that rapport with us, they would be like, hey, what about this? Or what about that? Or maybe we would see the opportunity and be able to suggest it. And over time, more and more clients of our agency straight up told us like, hey, we need this. We would rather go through you, even to the point where they knew we'd never done it. They would want us to manage the process and hire somebody.
That's exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. I'm telling you right now, your clients are going to hear about it. They're going to do it. You need to be proactive. Have your client path with your product line developed out in your client path based upon their pain point that they experience on a daily basis in most cases. I'm so sorry to be coughing like that. I apologize.
Absolutely.
Little head cold, right? My little niece came into town right after 2 years. I hadn't seen her, COVID and all. Love her to death. I don't remember, boy, she got me sick as hell last week. You know? Little smart factory. But yeah, that's exactly, you hit the nail on the head, man. So as their business is growing and after they get past just needing a website brochure up, they're going to need that website to convert, to be mm-hmm. functional, to log in and get stuff to employees or patients or clients or whatever it is. And they're going to expect you to know what they need before they need it. That's kind of your job, honestly, if you think about it. If you're serving a specific industry, it's kind of your job to know what they need from the marketing and technical perspective. Not, do me a favor, all of you out there, please, for the love of God, don't go into a call with a prospect and ask them what they need. Let's not forget why you're there.
Mm. Yeah.
Remember, they asked you to come in there because they thought you were the expert. And the first thing you ask is, hey, what do you need? I don't know what you need. Well, shit, man, I thought you were the expert. Do a little homework before you get in there and say, hey, man, I was doing a little homework on your industry. Here's what I think would be a really good solution for you, but I want to get your feedback on it. And it is amazing. The whole conversation will shift from that point forward with 3 minutes of a Google, you know, hey, what's everybody else doing? Hey, it looks like this is working. This is it. Let's go take a look at this. And, you know, just do your homework on it. And again, better yet, focus on one niche and then you don't have to do your homework. You already know. So.
Awesome. I love that, Lee. Well, I'm just looking at the time. I don't want to keep you too long past our scheduled time. I know you're a busy guy, but if anybody wants to reach out to you, get in contact, is marketingagencycoach.com the best place to go?
It is marketingagencycoach.com, or I have a Facebook group. You know, just go search for Marketing Agency Success GPS, I think is the name of it. Yep. So,
okay, awesome. We'll drop
all over my website as well. So anywhere on the website would be the best place to get started.
Perfect. Well, we'll drop a link to the website and as well as the Facebook group in the show notes so people can definitely get connected. And I actually just joined that Facebook group right before the call. So I'm excited to get in and get active. Cool. Now, before we wrap up, what is your favorite business or marketing related book?
Beyond Entrepreneurship by Jim Collins. It's the prereq to going from good to great. And that book, man, that book opened up my eyes into a leadership framework that allowed me to eventually remove myself from a business and sell my agency. Another one is Built to Sell by John Warlick. That's basically around, I'm not sure if I said his last name right, but is a lot of what I learned in the productization arena. It came out of that book. So those are both very important. Top 100 Ways to Market Guerrilla Marketing was a big one for sure. Okay, book, and what were the other ones again? I'm sorry, what was it?
Yeah, so the next question is, are you following any CEOs or entrepreneurs right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm constantly, you know, I always follow my, I love Clayton Mask and Scott Martineau over at Keep. I've known them for so long. I've seen their journey almost from a personal perspective about how, you know, they were in the small room shop and they went up and then they got a bunch of money from Goldman Sachs and had to pull. But anyway, it's just kind of the whole journey. So I admire those guys and how they have walked that tightrope over the past 15 years. And so I'm kind of always in tune with those guys, the leadership over at Infusionsoft. So for sure.
Awesome. I love that. And final question, what's your favorite business podcast, if you have one?
On podcasts, I got to admit, I kind of don't follow my own advice. I'll bounce around on podcasts. I don't know why I do that, but do you do that? Do you do that? I bounce around. I go podcast, but I don't think I have a favorite one. I just bounce around on podcasts. I don't know what that's about, but I do. So.
Yeah, no, I do the same thing for sure. I definitely have a few that are like the top ones where it's like, if I need kind of that hit of business, just motivation to push forward or like go back and re-listen to one of the episodes. There are a few that kind of stand out in my mind, but yeah, I got so many podcasts on there where it's like, I couldn't tell you the name of the podcast, but I know I love it.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of exactly. I'll bounce back and forth. I'll be in a group. Hey, go check this out. Boom. Oh, that's cool. I'll be on that for like a week, you know, and then, you know, it's kind of in and out kind of thing, but I'm just a insatiable learner. I never stop reading. I don't sit down and read cover to cover books a whole lot. I'm more that I'll find one book that I know is going to help me and I'll dive into that book. I'll be in that book for 6 months, but I'm taking note. I mean, I'm really all over it, right? Most of the time, I'm more of like reading short stories and articles and recent events and things like that. So I do it a little bit differently. I found a lot of people out there just read books, just I think to make themselves feel better nowadays. I think I'm not quite sure what that's about, but you know, that whole 52 books a year kind of thing. That's the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life.
Oh yeah.
That's the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life. I mean, like, you know why we write books? You know why people who write books write books? So you'll do something with them.
Yeah.
It's kind of the point. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of the point, right? So if you're reading one book a week, when the hell are you doing anything with it? You can't, right? You don't have enough time because you're constantly reading. So at some point you need to put the book down and go do what the book said to go do. And so I never have understood that. So I would read maybe two books a year, but those books were hyper-focused. I need to know how to do a product line or whatever it was. Right. And I'm in there, I'm diving through it. I'll listen to it on it with Audible or whatever. I'll listen to it two or three times, taking notes and go back and read that chapter again until I finally get what the hell is he talking about or she talking about. And so I tell you what, I mean, put the damn books down, start walking the set and stop, you know, stop reading, start walking. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't agree more. Like the Alex Becker, he runs a company called Hyros. He has this term that he's been using for years called mental masturbation. And that's all it is, right? It's like you're just, it's all just for fun, right?
Man, it's exactly. It's self-gratification.
Yeah.
It's not doing anything. It's not helping you. Same thing with the dopamine you get off the little Facebook likes and comments. Who cares? I mean, like really, unless they're going to give you dollar bills, who cares? Yeah. I'd rather go get the dopamine hit off of watching my little girl jump, you know, whatever. I mean, that's just my own personal thing, but if you're spending more than an hour or two on Facebook, unless it's directly related to driving business, not just chatting and commenting, I wish you the best of luck, but guys like me are probably going to whoop you. You know what I mean? Pretty good. Probably. So because we're focused, you know what I mean? Well, I'm not anymore. I'm sorry. I'm a quality of life guy now. I spend all my time with my daughter and on my lake and things like that, but on the lake out here, but, whenever I was in warrior mode and whenever you're building an agency, you better be in warrior mode. So, if you want to do it successfully, that is.
Awesome, Lee. Well, thanks for sharing so much so openly. Really, truly appreciate it. And I look forward to putting this episode out.
Awesome, man. I look forward to it. Thank you so much for having me.